I just really need a job.
This is telemarketing.
Stick to the script.
Hello?
This is Cassius Green. Sorry to bother you. I just wanted to...
You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice.
Thank this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regalview.
Was that Visa or MasterCard? We go level
up! You're going upstairs, my compadre.
Okay, bravo.
You don't have to sell out.
I'm not selling out.
Here's the starting salary. Well, man, I'm gonna have to get me some new suits.
We will have a transformative experience.
Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast bonus time. I am Oscar. With me only today is...
Only?
I mean, do you see anybody else here?
I don't know. Some ghost. Ralph?
Let's call it energy. Some energy. Entity. Wow, you wrote heavy eye roll. Anyway, what we typically do on the show is not what we're going to be typically doing today, but every month we pick a movie, I should say I choose a movie, that people who donate to our show, which you can find at otherpodcast.com, get that episode extra on top of the regular feed that month if they so do, you know, donate. But for those who do not, for the rest of you guys, it comes out 5 months down the road. This month's bonus episode is what you're listening to right now. Sorry to bother you if you're listening to this way later, like in January, December. I don't know when this will come out. That means that you waited. You opted to wait, and it's not a big deal. And here we are. So, Sorry to Bother You is the only thing we're going to be talking about today. It is the new movie by Boots Riley, who I'm not totally familiar with, but apparently he's a musician. You know Boots Riley?
Sounds like a musician.
Yeah, I think he... I don't know if he did music videos or if he's like a... I think I heard someone in a podcast say that he's a rapper or works with rap. I don't know what he does. Mm-hmm. But he's some sort of musician.
He's from Chicago, though. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know that. I know. I heard about that, too. And then this is his movie, and it feels like a musician's movie, honestly. So we'll get into all that jazz, and that's what we'll be doing today. You can send feedback if you, you know... like what we'd say about the movie or dislike it. You could tell us so at podmoviecast@gmail.com. And why don't we get into it, Ralph, shall we? Let's see. Sorry to Bother You. In an alternate present-day version of Oakland, telemarketer Cassius Green discovers a magical key to professional success, propelling him into a universe of greed. That is a short one. The long one's too long. It spoils too much. And this movie, written and directed by Boots Riley, as I said, stars Lakeith Stanfield, his first, at least that I've seen, movie where he is the star. He's always been in the background or supporting characters. In Get Out, he was in the opening, things like that. He's in Atlanta, but he's a supporting character in Atlanta. Very good actor. Tessa Thompson, who is like blowing up since Dear White People 3 years ago. Been blowing up.
I've seen she really has been, yeah.
Hella blowing up. Jermaine Fowler plays one of his friends. Omar Hardaway plays the other white guy. Terry Crews is in this for a moment. Danny Glover, Steven Yeun, Armie Hammer, as we said, I think I mentioned. Patton Oswalt plays, so there's some voice acting in this movie, and he plays, I forget who he plays, I think Danny Glover's white voice.
Oh yeah, okay.
I'm not sure. And there are others like that around here. But those are the main cast. Anyway, so this movie is, it blew up, man. It blew up in a populist way. It's not like it made a lot of money. For an indie movie, it did make a lot of money. But what I'm saying is that everyone was buzzing on this movie but before it even came out. And then, well, deservedly so, when it came out. And it does have some bonkers stuff in it. There's some ideas in here. We'll obviously have a spoiler section. But I guess maybe instead of asking what do you think of the movie just generally, what was the thing in this movie that grabbed you the most?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. The movie does a good job of... There's a twist in this movie. or a reveal. Well, I guess a reveal. It's not really a twist.
Yeah, it's not a twist. It's a reveal. Right. Yeah.
It's a reveal in the movie. It's a really good reveal. That really... should grab all of your attention.
Are you talking about the reveal, the creature thing?
Yeah.
I'm obviously keeping it vague.
Right. But yeah, it's not that.
Okay.
What I do enjoy is what grabs me is the, what's it called? His drive to be successful, right?
Oh, Cash's?
And what he's willing, yeah, Cash's drive to be successful, and the fact that he has this innate ability to sell or whatever, to mm-hmm. be professional in this way, and he has his white voice, as you said it earlier.
Yeah.
Played by David Cross, I think his white voice is. The way it's portrayed. Yeah. The way it's portrayed, it works, I don't know, it works really well, because he's a guy who obviously, it's something that's already, it's in him. It's something that's probably been embedded through him through everything, his whole life, from watching TV, watching anything like that.
Yeah.
Just overall, his world, but he's hated his life his whole time. But in order for him to be successful, he had to turn into that. And it's funny that I think that's the, I personally like that, and you don't get that until the end of the movie. And I think it's a cool scene, it's the really cool scenes from the movie as well, when he's talking like that, especially when they go on whole scenes full of just white voice.
Right.
Not just like a scene of a little bit of, you know, okay. No, like, it's a full scene.
Yeah. This movie's strange because it has a lot of things. It's like a shotgun full of different themes and things to say, and maybe cautionary tales in a way, different like like plot points that would have his own movie if they just focused on that. You know what I'm saying? It's for example, this is a rags to riches story in one way, and another way it's the downfall of letting conglomerates right take over, the monopolizing is racially charged. It's like about the bringing down of the minority in a big way because of what we see later, and then there's the experimentation, the crazy third act insanity that is like, it's like 10 steps farther into a future that could happen, but it's so ridiculous to us, right? I'm not saying it could happen for real. I'm saying that's a future that's ridiculous, but you can almost see it happen in a way. A lot of stuff is going on, and then you have like the art stuff with the girlfriend played by Tessa Thompson, who has her own things going on. I love those two together. I didn't think at first, I was like off because he's so desperate, you know. He's real, but he's desperate all the time, and he's broke. He hates that he's broke. But she's just so much more confident than he is, and it threw me off their chemistry at first, but then I learned to love it by the end, you know, with those two actors.
You learn to appreciate it because it's not your standard adolescent love. You know, it's not your, oh, I'm just attracted to you because of what you, you know, how you look, what you aspire to be. There is a little bit of love of what you aspire to be, but it's more, I love you because of just how real you are now.
Right.
And it's more like that. And, you know, we take that a lot for granted. Like, you can say that to somebody, be like, oh, I love all this. But, like, that's literally Tessa Thompson's, what is her name? Detroit?
Detroit, yeah. That's her mantra, though. Yeah, she does it for real. Like, she'll work at
that,
it to make
right,
sure.
But that's why she loves Cassius.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the biggest thing about Cassius. Yeah, like, you're, yeah, that's exactly it's what, like, you're you. Like, you're... You're you to 100%. I know exactly what to get from you. You're as vanilla as they come, you know, and that's, I love that shit. So that's why she, you know, that's obviously why they're in a relationship together. But it just doesn't, it's a little harder to sell because we're not used to that also.
Yeah.
Or programmed for it.
No, that's true. It's a little off-putting or to see on screen anyway. Yeah, for me, the biggest thing that grabbed me is everything that means, that goes with the white voice angle. Like the idea that this guy has to kowtow, and that's just one of many words and adjectives you can use to describe his process to making it big, you know, to be successful in America, is to do this. I say kowtow now, you could say many other words are just as good, like, you know, blending in, adapting, by things like that, and some will sound nicer than others.
Yeah, but
yeah. It's just I find that fascinating because you see that in daily life a lot. And you see that in a lot of the fashion stuff, a lot of the hierarchy of job placements. You see that in obviously the minorities and the non minorities. You see that everywhere combined. This movie kind of really just throws it in your face and say, "We're not going to be subtle. We're just gonna show it to you, and you're gonna scream it in your ear while we show you all this other stuff." Which means that, you know, some people, the ones that had a problem with this movie, as you can imagine, is because the movie is too scatterbrained for them. Is that a problem for you in this movie? It has a lot of things, has saying a lot of things. Political intrigue and activism and everything. Seemingly everything.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. But no, the movie isn't that long, so...
No. Yeah, well, no.
I think the movie's only...
Like 150?
One, yeah, there is a lot going on in the movie. I do agree with you there, but I didn't feel like, oh, we're on this, like we're, you know, everything kind of tied together, and that's actually
it did tie together for
so
you.
That's a cool thing about the movie, yeah. Where even though we're having a lot of big subjects we're talking about, you didn't have to let a lot of things breathe. You know, you focus on certain things. Certain other things were just kind of looming in the side. Double entendre on this. Mm-hmm. What's it called? You know, multiple meanings over here. But it's all combines. Like every main topic that we hit in the movie, where it's what's it called, Detroit's activism to what's it called, Cash's what's it called. Rise to power. You know, and it's like how it blends in together, the complete differences, mm-hmm. and how they're trying to blend together and what they were trying to focus on. It all works, and then the world around them.
Yeah.
Right? The world, the only thing I would say is for a lot of big stuff that goes on in this, the world still feels really small. It feels so local still. Like it never, like it affects them worldwide and everything. Everybody should be affected.
Yeah, it feels like,
but
yeah,
at the same time, like we don't care enough to ever care anything about the world, even though that's always looming.
Yeah.
Right? It's only what it's affected to them immediate. And I like that about the movie because I think that's how we are as human beings. Like we
right,
care
it's a community
enough.
We care.
Right, exactly.
The rest we can't see the world.
Well, we can see it on TV. We can care about it on TV or we can care about it. But in the end, it's like we don't experience it. So right. why do we really don't. It's just something in the back of our heads.
Yeah, but in this case, so there's a lot of stuff happening in the background that comes in the foreground later, and we'll talk about it in more depth and spoilers, which we should probably get into soon. But it involves this company that, you know how everyone's broke, so there's this company that houses their workers, and you see it a lot. And also, Boots Riley has very little good to say about our television industry. I'm just gonna say.
For sure. But what's funny is that you see it the first time and it's harmless to you.
It's so harmless.
The
right.
first time you see it, you kind of just look at it.
Right, okay,
you see it, you're like, it's a mix of, and this is you as a person viewing the movie.
Yeah.
It's a mirror person of like, huh, it's kind of weird, interesting. Okay. And then, as well as the character Cassius who sees it, he's like, oh, okay, it has nothing to do with me.
Right.
It's of not importance to me. So we take it as it's not important to us.
Also, he's not rock bottom yet. I feel like a lot of people in this movie who would see that as an option will only see it as a rock bottom option, right? To go with this company that's housing people if they lose their house or don't have any money or whatever. And Cassius is one of those people. It probably says a lot about him in the beginning of the movie how he has the worst car on the planet. He lives in his uncle's garage.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he's already pretty low. A lot of people's version of rock bottom already, but he's still, like, not doing it.
Yeah. Well, for him, it's like, I'm on the up and up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's like, I have nowhere else to go but up.
Right.
You know, and other people are like, wow, well, you're...
Other people give up too easily.
Right, other people, exactly. You just look at it different.
Yes. No, that's what I'm saying. I like that. It says a lot about Cassius.
It does say a lot about
Cassius. When you think back on the movie. Yeah. Yeah, I really like Detroit a lot. I love her stuff because this movie, even though it's saying all this super serious and obviously important stuff in our daily culture and what have yous, The movie is fucking entertaining all the time. Like, you could miss all of this, although some of that stuff you can never possibly miss because it's so in your face. But even you can ignore all of it, and it doesn't matter because the movie is so entertaining. It is like The Matrix, because you know how The Matrix has all this, you know, ultra scientific, you know, like ideas of machines taking over humans and all these ideas. But you don't have to pay attention. You just watch the action. It's right. So entertaining that you can avoid it. You just go for the style of it. This movie has a lot of style. And Detroit alone, she's her own movie of style with the earrings and her installations, and then the way she chose to take up activism because of his Cassius's new job in telemarketing, and what Steven Yeun's character, the activist, brings them all together, and she starts getting into activism from that, which you thought that she might have written already, but you know. And also, she takes her job super seriously, the silent job that did her day job super seriously,
yeah,
which is a great personality thing about her. That's just one character. You know, you go with the other people, and they all have their flaws and their weirdness. And this movie is put in a world where everything is already like askew from this one. It's everything's off by like 10 degrees. And everything's just a little more ridiculous, a little more funnier. Like, you think of the television show, what is it? I Got the Shit Beat Out of Me. Like, literally, that's the name of the title, I think, the show. And that's fucking hilarious, but also very bad. It's awful to live, like, and even Danny Glover's character in the bar, he like had the shirt about, you know, from that show, which, you know, makes me think, like, if that show existed today, you know, kind of, he's saying a lot of things, right, about all this stuff.
It is.
And, but I thought it was hilarious and dark and off-putting.
Well, yeah, it says a lot about our tolerance, too. I mean, like, I could delve into
it. And what anything you want to say about it? I mean, that's the reason the movie exists, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot about art. The movie, I think, is just a huge thing about, I would say, the message. One of the big messages of this movie is our tolerance or intolerance to media, to
reality.
To reality.
That was my first
to
one.
What's it called? Well, sorry, we were just talking about that whole show.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah. No, I know I'm right. To reality, to just about whatever we're willing to sacrifice for our greater good.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? What's our limits? Are we willing to change them? Things of that nature. Like, that's a lot of things, especially what Cassius goes through, because obviously that's who we're following here. And he's got his limits pushed.
Heavy like left and right.
Yeah, man. It's really funny.
Basically.
It's interesting, though, and it's interesting how you as a person have to deal with these situations. And it's real life. Like, it feels real life-ish. It doesn't feel fake, even though it is this, like you said, 10 degrees askew from our reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit funnier, a little bit darker, a little bit more crazy. That's their world. So it doesn't, like, it feels for us just funny, like, oh, that wouldn't happen. But that's in this world that is happening. And that's what it was.
Right. I think you could just replace that. Like, you know, I got my ass kicked out of whatever it's called. Replace that with the Kardashian show.
Yeah.
And it's insane popularity, and they're not doing anything useful. They're not, it's just a bunch of people talking. They're rich.
Yeah.
You know, it's like ridiculous. You could see another generation saying it's ridiculous. Things like that. Anyway, let's get into spoilers for Sorry to Bother You. We can get more into especially the crazy thing that happens later on. And we'll talk about the rich white man angle that comes in. So, spoilers starting right now.
Hey, young blood, let me give you a tip. Use your white voice.
Man, I ain't got no white voice.
Oh, come on, you know what I mean. You have a white voice in there, you can use it. It's like when you pulled over by the police.
Oh, no, I just use my regular voice when that happens. I just say, back the fuck up off the car and don't nobody get
hurt. All right, man, I'm just trying to give you some game. You want to make some money here? Then read the script with a white voice.
People say I talk with a white voice anyway, so why ain't it helping me out?
Well, you don't talk white enough. I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife. I'm talking about the real deal. Like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer, this is Langston from Regalview. I didn't catch you at the wrong time, did I?
Horse people, Ralph.
What the fuck?
Aquasapiens. Did you know that?
Wait, what were they called?
Equasapiens.
He couldn't say the word either.
yeah, it's hard. So the first one that he meets in that bathroom, remember?
Yeah.
When he's like, wait, that's not the emerald door. No, that's a forest green door. I'm like, they're all green. Why just pick different?
It was a jade door.
It was a jade door, whatever. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck? I didn't know the difference. Yeah. Anyway, that first one was played by Forrest Whitaker.
Really?
I didn't know that. And also the elevator. Remember the hilarious elevator that kept pumping up all their sales and by saying, your cock is hard rock, like all this shit? Uh-huh. That was Rosario Dawson.
Really?
Yeah. According to this, yeah. Voice in elevator.
That's funny.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I just want to point that out now. But that was the elevator stuff was so funny. It felt like a huge bit, but also like it, every joke has an underlying thing in there, like about what's fucked up about us.
Yeah.
Like, well, the reason we find that funny is because we know how fucked up that salesman can be in this kind of scenario. How first.
Well, it felt very Tony Robbins-ish.
Exactly. I think it makes fun of Robbins.
It felt like, you know, like, hey, you should motivate yourself to get, you know, to get yourself through the day. Yeah. And it's like, well, what does he need? He needs to feel like a rock star. So what do you say to a rock star? Like, your fucking cock is like the best thing. And you're like, what the fuck is going on? Even he's like looking around like, dude, what is going on? Dude, right?
I know.
And then the girl next to him is like, yeah, it is. Like, what?
Oh, yeah. She instantly wants to fuck him or whatever. That other middle management person. Oh, my God.
You're a top salesman or whatever. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, I'm bottom bitch compared to you.
Right.
Right. I'm just here to press the button for you.
Right.
A week ago, yeah, I was your fucking superior.
Right.
You know, and I was the gatekeeper.
Right. Now you're the king.
Yeah.
That elevator thing was so funny because it reminded me of Wolf of Wall Street, where Matthew McConaughey's character is talking to Leonardo DiCaprio's character about how many times he jerks it off.
Yeah.
And he's like I don't know, like 2-3 times a week. Like, those are rookie numbers. I do 5 times a day and all that shit. And like, that's what he needs to get going, and he needs to feel like that all the time, and the cocaine. It's like that, but for the elevator. And also, the what did you think?
Those are rookie.
The numbers. The long-ass password to get the elevator going. That's so ridiculous.
Well, don't you feel like that?
That went on for long.
But don't you feel like that? Yeah. That's how all your passwords are now?
Yeah. No, I get it. No, I get the joke.
I mean, don't you feel like every time you have to put in something, you're like, I don't fucking know what it is.
Yeah.
Like, how am I supposed to remember this ridiculously fucking thing that's supposed to be unmemorable? Because that's the whole purpose of the fucking password is like, you can't know it.
Right.
Right? So no one knows it. You're like, well, how do I get in? Like, you have to write it down on this fucking long-ass piece of paper.
Yeah, it was like a book. It's like, so it wasn't, but yeah. And I think of, and it made me think of how, for example, like, I work at Starbucks. Like, probably Starbucks doesn't know me by my name. They probably know me by my partner number, right. Which is funny, which is very much like a prison number. And you think of all these other things that connect with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not saying it's that dramatic, but it's on its way. It's not on its way not to be dramatic. Anyway, that's just the elevator part. But what'd you think of anything that happens later on, man? Like, when he gets from big to back to fall again, right? This is when he's already riches.
Yeah, well, I think when he gets big, it's, you know, he's offered all these opportunities. It's like everything happens at the right moment for him, for that company. Like, he gets big, and it's nice because now he's got all this money. He doesn't have to worry. Now he's not in the worry part of state of his life. He's got his own, he can get his own place, he can get his own thing.
Dude, he lives seemingly in the middle of the street.
Financial burden is gone.
Mm-hmm.
He's making money where he doesn't even need to see, oh, I got paid today kind of money.
Right.
You know, like, he still cares about how much he makes, right? But he's at the point where that just doesn't matter to him. So when he gets to that other stage where he's getting offered the proposition by Armie Hammer, mm-hmm. Oh, I forget the guy's name.
I'll find out while you talk.
Yeah. So when he gets offered that, it's like at a prime moment because he's hot. He's hot, you know, in the company. And but he's hot, but he's still young. He's still dumb, you know? It's like
does that explain the way he leaves his activism friends behind?
Yeah, because he's excited about everything that's going on. Like, everything's for him now. Like I said, everything financially wise is going great. But what he's not realizing is that it's affecting everything else. Is you basically signed a deal with the devil. It's like Cuphead. You know, he signed away the soul. And now he's like, fuck. Like, well, I wanted it back. I shouldn't have signed that. Well, now you got to do shit to get it back.
Yeah.
And you're like, motherfucker, right? And it's kind of the same thing here.
Yeah.
So he's like, I have to get, you know, I just realized that I got into this situation here. But for me I can't get out of it. And they were pushing me further into it, and I don't know how to say no. Or I don't know where I should say no or where I should stop. And by the time he gets there, he gets hoodwinked.
The horse thing.
Yeah, the horse thing.
Yeah. That's such a, you know, so you think that's that relates to the answer as to why he left his activism friends. But I was thinking that it seemed to me, when he did that, when he was approaching his first day right at his new position on the third floor or upper floor or whatever, that he was like, because my first thought was like, okay, you can do both. I don't understand why you can't have this new job and still support your friends, you know, but I understand that he can't actively fight against his own company that he just got promoted in. I'm not saying that, but like, he took such drastic actions the other way. Like he said, so many, he burned bridges fast, you know what I'm saying, in that meeting or in that thing outside before they started really rallying against everyone.
Oh, when he's talking to his friend?
Yes.
To that crazy extent?
Yes.
He gets to?
Yes.
Yeah. It was a really weird, like, they're giving each other props or something like that,
part
right?
of that young fool, him being young and foolish, is that he let literally money give him fake confidence.
Yeah. Well, like, that's what it was. Is that he got everything so fast. He didn't know how to deal with it. No one's ever taught. And it's an interesting thing also. It's like, it's a story that's been told many times, but it's a story that also, that you don't realize until you're an adult. No one teaches you how to deal with your finances. If you're poor, I'm going to tell you something right now. If you're poor or you grow up poor, even middle class, no one ever teaches you how to grow up your finances. You have to learn that yourself.
Yeah.
Or you have to go and find someone to teach it to you, or find a way to get it taught to you, you know, for you to learn it, should I say. Get it taught to you. Yeah, for you to learn it. That's how you know I'm stupid. Get it, you know, for you to learn it is because it's not something that, you know, like the system is going to help you for it. That's not how it's designed. They don't care about that. You know, that's something that's here, it happens for Cash, is the same thing. Yeah. You know, it's like, he doesn't know how to
He's having
this.
A problem that probably no one he knows from family or friends
has ever had that problem. No one has. So who did he talk to about that? Only his new friends have this
right, the people who are so him on the back saying,
right, exactly. So now he has to default to them, and they're like, you cut all your ties, they're other people now, they're what you were and what you never want to be again. And you're like, oh shit, you're right, to a certain extent, you know.
And then becomes like more of an asshole.
Exactly.
That was really messed up.
Because what's cool about this movie is that you can see a lot. You can break this into a lot of things in this movie. There's a lot of things that you can put from your own part also onto this movie, but you can pull out from the movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I probably put that onto the movie, but that's what I pulled out while I was watching it.
Definitely.
You know, and that's it's something that's not necessarily being said, right? But that's something that I noticed, and I can tell you. I mean, you're obviously agreeing with me. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not that I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong about it.
No, no.
But somebody could not see that at all. There's another person watching this movie who's like, yeah, definitely. I didn't see that at all.
For example, I think that maybe the weakest, I mean, not the weakest, the strangest is definitely the Equisapien, the horse people. Because.
Well, that's just the curveball of the movie.
It's a curveball. Well, the thing is that because when I first saw that, I laughed a lot because I was thinking the whole time, like, because the whole time before that, before when Cassius was climbing
it felt
the ranks,
Fallout-ish.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't know.
The game. I never played. The cuteness of like the video of instruction videos of how the world's gonna work.
Oh yes, I have seen those videos. Okay, yeah. It did feel that way. Yeah. Right, I've seen those commercials. No, what I was gonna say is that earlier when he was telemarketer, right, like a regular guy. He kept being told, stick to the script. That was the main thing. STTP. STT, whatever. S. Stick to the script. And it's kind of saying the movie has a structure in a way. And then it's like Boots Riley himself is like, I'm not going to stick to the script in the third act. I'm just going to go do this other thing.
It's kind of funny, yeah.
The way that Cassius Green's life has been curveballed to get to that point, right? Which is, I loved it. That's why I laughed so hard. It was like I met a nice little thing. And then I was thinking about the whole horse people thing. And then it is mocking a ridiculous future with a lot of undertones of reality in there. I'm not saying the biological morphing of people. Not to say that can't happen. There's definitely, we're on our way there. Just saying not to that extent. And it got kind of ridiculous. I found that point was my least favorite in general to think about because it doesn't lead anywhere beyond being just a funny footnote or a funny punchline or anecdote, you know what I mean?
Right.
But a lot of people did get a lot more out of it than I did, and other people got way less. But a lot of people hate that ending. Or hate that.
Well,
third
a lot
act.
Of people hate it. Well, it's funny because
also saved the day with the activism stuff. Remember when they were like at that night thing when he got out, we quit.
Yeah, and you're
so,
right.
It did save them there, so it kind of became like a weird god machine in a weird not really, but you know.
Yeah.
Yes and no. Anyway, what do you think of that?
What's funny is that it's easy right away to. For that part of the movie to make it or break it for you, because it takes this crazy turn that you're not expecting. But if you weren't in the movie already,
it's so unpredictable. Though
the thing is, yeah, it is. It really is. The thing is, if you're not in the movie already, this movie breaks it for you. That part breaks it for you. I think more often than it would make it for you, yeah. Because if you're not in this movie, you didn't care about what it's talking to you about anyway. So by the time this comes, maybe you like it because, yeah, it's just a fucking crazy movie about horses. You're like, no, that's what you got out of it. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it's talking about. Like, it is and it
definitely.
Isn't.
Definitely.
You know, there's an actual discussion to be talked about here in this movie.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. It's.
I think it's worse. I think it can be worse than that, though. I think someone who's so into the movie and into all these themes and things is activism and corporate America, monopolizing job, minorities, stuff like that. Everything Cassius goes through and his girlfriend. I think anyone can be completely into them. And then when they see the horse thing happen, I can see them going, okay, like this movie is this fucking weird to be weird. Yeah. You know, I can see that still happening. Even if you're into its themes and whatever. I can see people disliking the movie because of that.
Right.
And from a natural state of enjoying what's going on before.
Yeah.
And understanding it and seeing the nuance of it or whatever. Which is to say that I didn't dislike it. It was massively entertaining. I thought it was hilarious.
So did I.
And I get most of what it's saying. And I just liked it the least.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. Yeah. I do agree with you there. What I also like when it comes to that horse people thing... It feels like your job coming up with a new excuse of you having to do something new and ridiculous at work. Also, do you feel like that way?
Yeah. Okay.
It kind of it's visually said here, visually put. It is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, like the little caveat that I forgot to mention is that obviously you would have to become a horse person, but don't worry. There's a whole like.
Reversal,
right? Yeah. Where we already have that worked out. Where, but you know, we don't want a non-horse person running them. You need to become a horse person so you can actually run them. And we want the person on the inside, since you're already our up and coming guy. It makes sense for you to do it, you know. And you're like this weird, always having to adapt at work, always have to with new changes of policy or new things.
But it describes, by the way, Armie Hammer plays such a great racist, white, rich guy.
Right.
Oh, my God. He's like uncannily like everyone.
Yeah. I feel like if I ever saw him, and even though he was like the nicest person, I'd be like, secretly, you just don't care about anybody. Like, I would just feel like, I think you just go home and be like, Maria, bring me my thing, like to my server.
Like Joffrey or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, and just like, oh, like,
right. You know, right. Because, you know, every actor, at least from what it sounded like, and also like, I didn't see any white horses. You know what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying now? Yeah. This up-and-comer is black, not for no reason.
Right.
That's why you chose them.
Right.
The reason why they all sound ghetto as fuck when their horses are talking to them later because they're like picked up these people from the street or from the company that they house people for the employees.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's just so fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's so underlying to a lot of the problems we've had in our past in this country alone, not to mention every other goddamn country.
Yeah.
That I'm not saying the past is present or repeating and everything. It is repeating, but also it's not really about that. It's just saying it's such a reminder.
Yeah.
And it's just a worse version to just fuck with their biology.
Right. Well, what's funny is that it's another whole thing about it's like a physical representation, physical visual representation of like, well, in order for you to be better for you as who you are right now, this is as best as you're going to get. But if you want to be better in life, and in yourself and in this company, you will have to physically change your appearance.
Yeah.
Right? And everything.
Oh, my God. That scene where he has to rap in front of them is the worst scene.
You know what?
In that movie.
I cringed so hard. I cringed at that. And I can't stand watching things like that. And in the movie theater, I felt so uncomfortable in my seat. And, you know, and then how he gets away with it was beautiful.
Hilarious. But beautifully hilarious.
And then it goes on too long and it feels cringy again.
Yes.
And you're just like, oh, like, I hated that scene. I hated that scene.
It just told me that white people want an excuse to say the N-word.
It does.
It just that's all it felt to me. Right. I'm like, oh my God, guys, come on. Just be happy with what you have. You're white. Just stay in the white lane.
Right.
Come on, man. Anyway, but I was going to say something else about the him. The idea that Armie Hammer's character, what's his name, Steve Lift, thought so much in advance to – it's like he's – he's like both taking account of the cultural thing and not. So he knows he needs these horse people workers to be under control and have a leader.
Right.
I mean, we all know that he could do it himself. Him and his guards or his own leaders or his own people could do it themselves. That would look heavily like raising cattle or slavery, but they could do it. But he's retroactively thinking that they need a leader of their own color that they control themselves, which would be Cassius in this case, that they're thinking in advance of protecting themselves from racial discrimination. Like, it's so fucked up. Yeah. Like, it's has so many levels to a fucked up upery. And let's go with the ending. I mean, there's a lot of scenes that happens, but finally, this scares Cassius, right? This scares Cassius to the point where, like, he thinks his muscles are flaring.
He gets tricked into. He takes cocaine, right? And then he thinks it's the drug, right, to become a horse. And then he's like, no, that was just cocaine. It's just really good fucking cocaine.
Yeah.
You probably never felt like this because this is really fucking good cocaine. Like
Peruvian white or something.
Yeah, whatever bullshit he says, exactly. He's freaking out that everything's like, oh, my nose is everything's fucked up. And he's going to his old friends because he can't talk to his new friends.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in a weird position there because obviously his actual friends were his friends that he left behind. So now he's trying to ask their help and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then you have where he gets the proof. He has a video, the phone or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And he's trying to get rid of it. He's trying to make it public. He doesn't know how to.
No, the thing is that he does everything to – he actually makes it public. Doesn't do anything.
Right. Well, no, he doesn't know how to. What he does get to is that he gets to that that show.
Oh, my God.
And he gets beat the fuck up because he's like, well, you can't just – when you want something from us, you got to get beat up.
He also gets he's in a pile of shit or something? He's full of shit, too, at some point. I don't remember all the details, but...
something crazy, yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, and what's so funny is that he thinks like, oh, well, I did the right thing.
Like when he's like shaking, like, can you put the video on?
Yeah. Anyway. It's out there. You know, like, they're going to be like, oh, my God, this company's going to get closed. Everything about it, I saved the day.
It's the activism angle. It's like the version of the whole Me Too movement, right? Yeah,
I saved the day. Everything's going to quite the opposite. The business does even better.
Mm-hmm.
Like the stocks go up. Everybody wants in on it.
It's like the wrong thing gets noticed, which is like the can to his head.
Right.
Right, where there's wigs of his own head.
Right.
Anyway, and it's fucked up. Yeah, it's super fucked up. It says a lot about what our media is. And also, the idea of fake news comes into play without actually saying the words fake news, unless they do say it. I don't know if they say it. I don't think so. Because no one believes, people only believe what they want to believe. They will, if they get shown a video of aliens, they will say everything in their power, if they don't ever believe it, to discredit, even if it's right there in their face.
Right.
And vice versa, right? The opposite also works. And for people who believe the opposite. So it's... that's a good movie. It's a good first movie for Boots Riley. I'm really, really enjoyed this movie. It's so much fun. What do you think of the very ending, the rebelling and of the compound of the white guy?
I liked it. Well, I like it was this whole thing about the white guy's like, nothing's ever going to come against me.
Right.
He's
being indicted and all. It doesn't matter.
Right. He's like, I don't care. Like, it'll be a fine. It'll be a slap on the wrist. Yeah. I'll be fine. No worries. Nothing's ever going to happen wrong to me. He's like, no, that's where you fucked up.
Right.
That's where you undermine. Exactly.
Yeah.
Forgot that, you know, there's always, what's it called, that the little man was there, and then they're still coming after you.
Wait, it's more of them than there are of you. Oh, that reminds me of something. What is it to say to you that Boots Riley at least makes you think as the audience that even though Cassius tried everything in his power to get everyone to pay attention to this rising problem, that it took a riot full of violence and horse people killing people and flipping cars for people to notice? What does that say about what the movie's trying to
feels how desensitized we are to...
That's what it took, right?
Yeah, that it actually had to happen to where the fact that people are like, oh, wow, this is actually real. I thought we were just playing around here.
Well, do you think that's a truism? Do you think that's a something...
I think it's until it doesn't happen to us, we don't care kind of thing.
You mean to a community or to a country?
Both. I think we're at the point where if it doesn't happen to us physically or us as a community, we don't care. Because I think as far as the country goes, it's easy to say that, but we don't care because there's a lot of things that happen in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean,
a week later, we forget it happened.
It does feel that way.
That happened like 10 years ago. What are you talking about? And you're like, no, that happened just recently. That community never forgot because it happened to that community.
Right.
But
right, the people who have, you know, who saw the shooting of that kid.
Exactly.
Versus
but,
who saw
but where it didn't happen, you know, it's just like, whatever.
All right. So I think we're going to cut it.
Yeah.
But it's a very cool movie. We recommend it. Sorry to Bother You. Cool. I love the title too, Sorry to Bother You, because it's the opening of his telemarketing spiel. Anyway, that is it for our show. We'll be back next month for some movie that I don't know yet. So until then, I'm Oscar.
And Ralph.
Lates.
Mr. Daniel? I'm finished.